Good Morning Football is a production of the NFL in partnership with iHeartRadio. Welcome to Good Morning Football. We are here. We are live. We're live all week, even on Thanksgiving, the day after. If you're watching us for the first time, this is our little football show. 3 hours long, full of highlights, full of analysis, full of fun. We're presented by Old Trapper Beef Jerky, and we are live in New York. It's Wednesday, November 24th. My name's Kay, Kyle Brandt, Peter Schrager, and Super Bowl champion Sean O'Hara joining us while he's filming commercials on his phone in a commercial break. It's fine.
Just trying to get some coffee. Just trying to run on it. That's all.
I don't need any coffee. I'm so excited for these next 3 hours as we hit the lead block.
Lead block.
Let's go. We got some huge news right here in New York yesterday after a loss to the Bucs on Monday Night Football, which we chewed on yesterday, talked about the ins and outs, the gravity of the situation. After our show, the Giants relieved Jason Garrett of his duties as offensive coordinator. Head coach Joe Judge gave his reasoning on a conference call yesterday.
Listen, I'll make every decision based on what's best for the team long term. I feel we have to be more productive as an offense. Generally speaking, the offensive job is to score points. I don't believe we're scoring enough points. And it's my job as the head coach to make sure I give our players an opportunity to go out there and make plays.
Ian Rappaport joins us right now. Ian, happy day before Thanksgiving. Let's talk about this and this Giants situation. Things have to change. They decided to change them ahead of week 12, ahead of Thanksgiving. What can you tell us about the Giants and their departing of ways with Jason Garrett?
Yeah, it's a short week, but clearly the Giants and specifically Coach Joe Judge believe that this was the time to do it after the performance on Monday night against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. The offense just simply did not look functional, just did not look like one that would score enough points and function enough to keep this team going where they want to go, not just now, but in the future. So many levels to this firing of Jason Garrett. First of all, certainly this is something that coaching staff and the administration had considered for some time. I know this was a discussion before the season, decided to keep Jason Garrett based on what he could do with the offense and also for continuity for Daniel Jones. Then they get into the season, the offense, as Judge said, simply does not score enough points. And even as Jason Garrett said in his very nice statement, the bottom line is the results just were not what they wanted. He thanked the administration and coaches for everything they've done. But you can't run an offense this way. And now Freddie Kitchens is not going to be the OC, but he is going to be the play caller. His last stint as an interim really went extremely well with the Cleveland Browns. We'll see if they get more aggressive, more creative, and get this offense working better. There's also another part to this. You know, at some point, the Giants have to make a decision on Daniel Jones. The way the offense was designed, how do you even make a decision on if this is your quarterback of the future or not? The hope is it is much more functional under Freddie Kitchens, similar to what he did with the Browns a couple years back. And at the very least, if they don't claw their way back into the division, they will know what Daniel Jones is.
There's, of course, also a Saquon Barkley decision to be made in short order after that, and everyone is on notice. Thank you so much, Ian. Appreciate you. What does the Jason Garrett news mean for these Giants going forward? Sean, I'll go right to you. You won a Super Bowl with this team. You know the expectations, the legacy. What do you got?
Yeah, this is a tough one. Listen, I think that Jason Garrett's first class all the way, and I challenge anybody to find something negative to say or anybody to say anything negative about Jason Garrett, the man. His offense, on the other hand, has been a completely different conversation. And, you know, that full screen right there, the red zone is the biggest issue. That's what Joe Judge is talking about from a point standpoint. And we talked about this yesterday, what's broken about it. And I think when you look at the fact that no Saquon Barkley, that was a big factor with this. You can't throw that just like, oh, hey, you know, teams overcome that. No, Saquon missed the entire year last year. That was a big factor in it. But the bottom line is when they got down in the red zone, it was like the Bermuda Triangle. And so That's where you're most disappointed with the production from a standpoint. But to Ian's point, moving forward, I honestly don't know where this takes the Giants because everybody asks me, what do you think of Daniel Jones? What do you think of this Giants player, this Giants player? And when I watch film, when I turn it on, I see incompetence all across the board on different plays. It's one play, it's this guy. The next play, it's that guy. And it's really been hard to even say, this is what he is. This is what they are. I still, to this day, I don't know what the Giants offense does well right now. I mean, it's not the red zone. It's not short yardage. They don't run the ball really well. They don't have a signature play. They don't have a style. They don't have an identity. And I think that really is what Giants fans and what football fans want. They want to know, what's our offer here? This is what we do. This is how we do it. And, you know, with respect to Daniel Jones, look, I want to know, all right, what does this guy do well? I know he runs really well. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I know he's a threat to run. I know he's got a great deep ball. This offense has not been aggressive. They've not been explosive. They have not attacked down the field. So how do you evaluate? Is that on Daniel Jones? Mm-hmm. No, he's not calling the plays. He's doing what the coaches are telling him. So I still have more questions about this offense and the future of not just Daniel Jones, but, you know, everybody. I mean, mm-hmm. it's still a young team. And the reason why I think they waited this long is just because with Jason Garrett is because they wanted everybody to get back full strength. Saquon came back. Andrew Thomas came back. Kenny Golladay was back. And that Tampa Bay game, that Monday night game, to only score 10 points, mm-hmm. they played two times on Monday Night Football in 3 weeks. And they scored 10 points against the Bucs and 14 points against the Chiefs. That's it. That was the undoing.
With Eli on the Manning cast watching and wincing in pain, mm-hmm. and I think a lot of Giants fans were in the same boat. Okay, so do you know who's calling the plays now? Freddie Kitchens now steps up and will be calling the plays. And I wonder if this is what Joe Judge would have preferred all along. He almost inherited Jason Garrett in a way where Jason Garrett's available as a former Giant. He's a brilliant head coach. He's won Coach of the Year. Let's put him as our offensive coordinator with our young head coach. In Joe Judge's final season as a college football player, he was a quarterback at Mississippi State. Freddie Kitchens was the tight ends coach on that team. And then the following year, when Joe Judge says, I want to go into coaching, and goes to Mississippi State to be a graduate assistant, Freddie Kitchens is the running backs coach. So they have this long relationship. That was in the 90s. Mm. And with Freddie Kitchens is this whole list of Alabama guys on the Giants coaching staff that Joe Judge worked with at Alabama. I always felt like Jason Garrett and Joe Judge was like this weird match of a marriage that is now 1 year and 12 weeks in where they didn't know each other really before they got together. And it's, if Joe Judge is going to be head coach of the team, let's at least give him his guys that he can actually coach with. So Freddie Kitchens, roll your eyes if you want. You're at home. You're like, oh, the Browns. Freddie Kitchens has been a coach in the league for 15 years. Mm-hmm. And Joe Judge is putting this on him. Now, you got 7 weeks left. What are you going to do? Got to make a decision on your running back. Saquon Barkley was a second overall pick, and he has missed 16 of the last 24 games that the Giants have played. I don't blame him. I think everyone loves Saquon, the player, but he's been already added on for next year. His fifth-year option has been picked up, so he'll make $7 million next year. What happens in the offseason, though, is a player entering that season usually gets a big extension, or they don't, and it's like, all right, we're not going to pick you up, and it's probably your last year with the team. Now, the Giants could franchise tag Saquon and drag this along and all along, but if Saquon's healthy and Freddie Kitchens, who is a running backs coach by trade and was Nick Chubb's running backs coach in Cleveland, is the guy, let's see what the offense might look like around Saquon Barkley, a healthy version of it. So to me, you're not going to the playoffs. You're not winning a Super Bowl. 7 weeks left. Let's see what Freddie Kitchens has got as offensive coordinator. And let's, more importantly, see if Saquon is a guy worth bringing back for years to come.
That's it, Peter. I mean, you're trying to conjure some optimism from this. I look at it this way. This week, it's friends and family week, right? And I think our closest friends at this table are the flagship teams, the teams we've been friends with for a long time. And you look around, it's at the Giants. Oh, my God. The Bears, rough. The Raiders, I have no idea. These are the friends that come. You don't even want to give them food. You want to give them, like, a hot shower and a fresh set of clothes. It's rough. But I'll say this for the Giants. At least they're doing something. My concern would be Jason Garrett is such a gentleman and so classy, and he's just a respected guy and an ex-Giant. We will address this in the offseason. No, they're doing it now. Because I think the problem with some of these teams, and certainly the Giants, but these old friends we have, I think they're sometimes the last to evolve. I really do, because they're built on a bedrock of success and their formula and doing things their way. So they're the last to evolve. Well, look around right now. Look at the offenses that we see in this league. It's Cliff, it's LaFleur, it's Kellen Moore, it's Kubiak, it's McVay. It's all these young guys. And that doesn't mean you have to fire everybody over 40 and hire some high school whiz kid. I think Sean Payton is still extremely inventive. But Mike McCarthy, I think maybe the best decision he has made as a coach is keeping Kellen Moore as his offensive coordinator. Jason Garrett had not been an offensive coordinator in over 10 years. It had been a long time. And they hired him, and it didn't work. And it seemed like a very Giants, old-fashioned, old money, old Sears Roebuck type way of doing things. And, like, that's not the way that money is getting made right now. It just isn't happening. So I respect that they didn't just ride it out and say, we support Jason. No. It's not working. You fire him. That's what teams do now. And as far as moving forward, I thought they were just going to ride out Daniel Jones and they'll bring him back next year and not extend him and they'll be a lame duck. If the season ended right now, the New York Giants would have the fifth pick in the draft and the sixth pick in the draft because they have the Bears and they have their own, and both those teams are bad. There's quarterbacks coming out, and I'm not sure that one of them is not going to be New York Giant next year.
Do you think there's a more drastic turnaround than Jason Garrett outside the quarterback spot, or is this enough? Like, is it? Are you comfortable with, like, a Kitchens, Joe Judge situation, or do you think this is, like, a first domino to drop situation? After hearing what Mara said in the offseason, yeah, after what they haven't done on the field, they need, like, a philosophical facelift. You're right about the evolution stuff, all those play callers. It's not about age. It's about ingenuity. It's about, look at Sean Payton. He somehow stays relevant. Yeah. He's on the cutting edge. He's consistently you can just see it on the field, reevaluating, adjusting, evolving. That it's like if you have Joe Judge there and he has that old school mentality, the GM's a little old school, you have to surround him with pieces that are more progressive football talk wise.
I think the apologists for Daniel Jones are going to have a cold war this offseason with all the people saying get a new quarterback. And Sean, you're kind of itching on it too. And there's a lot of people who are saying, how can Daniel Jones work with this? We're not getting a fair look at him. I think we've seen a lot of Daniel Jones football out there. Fifth pick and sixth picks at the season ended today. A lot of young quarterbacks coming out.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, no doubt.
Right now, Whiteboard Wednesday, Jerry Jones joining the program in a little bit. Stay tuned for that. But let's talk about the Buccaneers. Let's talk about teams that might go on a heater here down the stretch of the regular season. A dominant win over the Giants Monday night for Tom Brady and company. And he said, quote, that he's hoping our best football's ahead of us. I want to know the team that you think is going to get hot in week 12. Who?
The New Orleans Saints had the number one rushing defense in the entire NFL heading into last week. And then they ran into something called the Philadelphia Eagles. The Eagles right now are one of the best running football teams in the league. And the irony of it all is that when they played Tampa on a Thursday night game, Miles Sanders had a meaningless third quarter carry. Mm. And the entire crowd sarcastically laughed because they hadn't been running the ball. Well, here come the Eagles. Do you know, in the league, the whole season, despite their early in the season running troubles, the second best rushing football team in the entire NFL, it's the Philadelphia Eagles. And if that's not enough,
head scratcher,
how about yards per game? Number two in the entire league. Who do you think it is?
Eagles?
It's the Philadelphia Eagles. They've got the best offensive line in football. Yeah, I'll say that with Jerry Jones maybe listening. I think the Eagles, they're manhandling opponents in the trenches, and they're taking on a Giants team that had just played a few days ago and fired their offensive coordinator. They're retiring Strahan's jersey up in MetLife this weekend. I wouldn't be surprised if there's quite a few John Runyon and Jeremiah Trotter jerseys in the building. Eagles fans are alive. Giants fans, I'm not so sure if we're going to see a lot of them on Sunday. So Eagles, here we go.
There could be a couple scrums into it. Now they're running the ball. It's just a big head scratcher.
I like it.
Those two. What do you got?
They might ask Strahan to put the jersey back on.
All right.
Listen, take me out to the West Coast. Give me the L.A. Rams.
Okay.
Some optimism.
I know they're coming off of two butt whoopings, back-to-back weeks. They go into the bye week kind of licking their wounds, but when you look at their schedule and look at what they've got coming on, they're coming out right now. They got the Green Bay Packers, right? All right, that's going to be a tough one. But then they got Jacksonville, Arizona, Seattle, Minnesota, Baltimore, and San Francisco. So the schedule, look, I think those are all winnable games for them. But I just can't wait to see this defense now with more time. They added Von Miller to this defensive front with Leonard Floyd and with Aaron Donald. And, look, I didn't think Von initially was great, but I think he's going to morph into a little bit more of a focus on that defense. So that's going to be a defense that no offense wants to stop. When you break the huddle, you're looking for, all right, where's Aaron Donald? All right, there's Leonard Floyd. We got Vaughn too. Mm-hmm. Like, good luck with all that stuff. And offensively, that's a nightmare.
All right, I'm going to take a shot on this one with a bunch of question marks. I think the Cowboys.
Okay.
They're tomorrow. They're playing the Raiders. I want to believe. You got to get going, right? Like, this is going to be the year. This is a special year, right? It was weird in Kansas City. It was weird against Denver, but the Raiders are reeling. It's Thanksgiving Day. This is America's holiday. You're America's team. You got horses. I know there's injury concerns with CD and Zeke, but you got number four, right? Peter just did an infomercial for the Eagles on live TV in a year when it's your year. Never, the NFC East is small potatoes for you. You're supposed to win the whole shooting match here. So if there was ever a time to be like, yeah, we had our stumbles midseason like the Bucks did last year, but we got right, it is Thanksgiving, and it is tomorrow, and it's against the Raiders. Dallas, a lot of question marks up there, but I'm choosing to still believe.
Is it weird that you know Jerry Jones is listening to you right now?
Well, listen, live television
like
is like it's circumcising a gnat or whatever it is. Like it's a very finite, specific business, Mr. Jones.
Yeah, he's on line one. He's ready to come on the
Let's
show.
Let's go.
We're going to talk about something that really resonates with this show. It's been here with us since the beginning, and it truly gets us in the holiday spirit. It is the Red Kettle campaign that supports and changes the lives of so many millions. I'm talking 30 million plus around this great country. We have Jerry Jones, the owner of the Cowboys. We have the executive vice president, Charlotte Jones, joining us, and the commissioner, national commander of the Salvation Army. All up next. Don't go anywhere. You whiffed, Kyle.
Yeah, I think we whiffed.
As they have for years and years, the Dallas Cowboys are partnering with the Salvation Army for the 2021 Red Kettle Campaign. And here to tell us all a little bit more about the important work that is being done, we have the Cowboys owner, president, and general manager, Jerry Jones, the executive vice president and chief brand officer of the Cowboys, Charlotte Jones, and the commissioner and national commander of the Salvation Army, Kenneth Hodder, joining us. Good morning.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Thanksgiving.
Good morning.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Yes, we love doing this with you. We've done it every year since our show has been here on NFL Network. Jerry, I'll start with you. The funds raised through the Red Kettle campaign supported services for nearly 30 million Americans in need last year. Tell us a little bit about why the Red Kettle campaign and the partnership with the Salvation Army is so important to you, to your family, especially given this trying year and a half that we've had.
Well, let's start with this day, Thanksgiving, and let's start with this game. We could well go over to be viewed by 60 or 70 million people throughout the day. To team up with the Salvation Army, who have been in this country for over 100 years and who have a great tradition of 2.5 million volunteers, really 5,000 officers, and they basically man those red kettles to encourage people to put a dollar in them, stays in their community and helps Santa Claus first, helps housing, helps food. All of those things can be enhanced by one of the things that we have so much in the NFL. It's called visibility. And so to get as many people as we can familiar with how special the Salvation Army, they don't have meetings. They've got the shoes on them and the food in their mouth while other people are having meetings. That's why we're sold on the Salvation Army. And that's why Zeke may be sleeping in that red kettle back there. But we don't have him jumping in there during the day.
Go check in on Zeke. He might be right behind you right there, Mr. Jones. Charlotte, the annual Red Kettle campaign has raised nearly $2.8 billion since the national kickoff began in 97. That's unbelievable. What goals have you guys set for this year's fundraising campaign through the Red Kettles that we'll see across the country?
Well, I'll tell you what, we're in our 25th year of this incredible partnership, and we get to launch it one more time with Luke Combs in the middle of our game tomorrow. And we have a goal of raising 50% more than we did last year. Obviously, the need is greater, but we hope to raise over $175 million. And that money goes right into the community in which we live and all across the nation. So when you put that dollar into the Red Kettle, it's going to stay there. And you don't actually even have to put it in the Red Kettle anymore. You can text Kettles to 51555. You can even give us your Bitcoin or cryptocurrency. Or ask Alexa. You know, there's all kinds of ways to give, and there's ways to volunteer. There's ways to adopt an angel. But, you know, we have the obligation to inspire people during our game to be grateful, to be generous, and to give to the Salvation Army. And this is why we do it.
It's an important message. But since you mentioned the football game tomorrow, let's dig into it. Jerry, we have you here. We got to talk a little football on Thanksgiving. Your team is dealing with some injuries. Most teams are right now. Amari Cooper, he's out with COVID-19. CeeDee Lamb had a concussion on Sunday. Do you think CeeDee Lamb will suit up? And if he does not, tell me about this wide receiver core and why they're going to be okay.
Well, first of all, we've got depth. And this is the time when you really need it. And we're going to call on it. We've got to protect our quarterback so we can get the ball to them. But our strength of our team, or one of our strengths, is our receiving core, and it is the depth. But, you know, the receivers themselves aren't the only ones you throw the ball to be tried. You can get it to the tight end, or you can have it coming out of that backfield to the guy that jumps in the red kettle, or to Pollard, who we like to have a ball in his hands as well. So I think we will have to really focus on establishing the run, because when they gather up to stop the run, that's when we can utilize our receivers the most. That'll be the plan tomorrow. Oakland will have a lot to say, not Oakland, but Las Vegas. We'll have a lot to say about that. We've got to be ready to go.
Oh, I'm so ready for this game. I wish we were playing it right now. But Charlotte, we have a funny memory of you on this program. You came on the show when we were set up right outside the building you're in now. It was during the NFL draft. And this plucky little team from Philadelphia had just won the Super Bowl. And your thought was, well, they can have one. We have five of them. It's nice that they have one. And we all laughed. This year for the Cowboys, maybe more than a lot of other years, is about getting that next one. It's about getting that Super Bowl. Right now, midseason, as we come down the home stretch, what is the optimism in the building and amongst the team and the organization that this will be the year?
Well, we want that next one, that's for sure. It's been way too long since we've held up that trophy. And that was back in the 90s. That was actually when we started this campaign. That's how long ago it's been. It's time. And I think there's incredible energy, not only in our locker room, but throughout our organization and in our fan base, that everyone has a lot of hope. And this is a great time of year for hope. And we think that we certainly have the right tools in order to get there. We need things to go our way, as everybody does, but staying healthy. We've got a great leader in Dak. We've got a lot of great young guys that are motivated, fired up, and our veterans leading the way. So we have all the pieces. Now we just have to put them together and execute it.
This Cowboys team, we came into this season and it was, what are we going to get? There's so much expectations. There's so much wonder about Dak. And then Jerry, Micah Parsons gets onto the field and we're like, oh my gosh, they might have the best rookie in all of football. And you guys traded back to get him. Just as we're going into week 12 and Thanksgiving, do a little progress report for us, Jerry, on Micah Parsons and how happy you are to see the way he's developed in his first season.
Well, he's intense. The great DeMarcus Ware spends time with him, trying to work with him on his pass rushing techniques. And he's just blown away by his Gumby. Gumby is when you can bend and you're still running and can get around the blocker. And then his burst from standing still to a certain point. It's Deion Sanders kind of burst if you try to measure it and time it. So he's an outstanding player, but his ambition, his desire to be better, is the thing that's hard to put your finger on in a draft. But boy, when you get next to it, it just jumps out at you. He certainly is motivational. But the good news is we have several outstanding young players. We have players that aren't even on the field. The game we played last week, three starters on our defensive line weren't even there, but will be there later in the year. So we're hopeful that these young players are getting the reps that will really serve us well as we get on into the season. But then when we get some of the veteran players that have been injured but are coming back, that we'll have that rotation that will keep us fresh and let us really be a contender.
Jerry Jones preaching the importance of depth down the stretch. We love it. It's a longer season, a bigger season than ever, and we hope to see you in L.A. for that Super Bowl, playing in it. Thank you for all of the time, the important work. Jerry Jones, Charlotte Jones, Kenneth Hodder, and we will be looking for those red kettles to help donate to the Salvation Army. Thank you so much.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Thanks so much. Happy Thanksgiving.
Full schedule on NFL Network tomorrow. I can't believe Thanksgiving tomorrow. It all kicks off right here on GMFB, of course, at 7 till 10. Then NFL Game Day Morning takes over at 10 a.m. A triple shot of NFL Total Access in between each game.
See what you did there, triple shot.
West Coast viewers got to wake up at 4 a.m. if you want us tomorrow.
Oh, yeah.
Get up early.
Do it.
Start the day with
or
us.
Or stay up.
Fine.
You know what? Look, stay up. It's a big night.
Middle course tomorrow has a tasty matchup between the Raiders and the Cowboys. Jane Slater has the latest from Dallas.
Cowboys owner Jerry Jones says the game plan heading into the Kansas City Chiefs match was for the Cowboys to run the ball far more than they did. They weren't able to get it going, but we did notice that Ezekiel Elliott was struggling with his knee. Talking about that on Tuesday, he says that this is a situation where he's managing the pain. He said that when he takes a hit or has it twisted, he just deals with it. He says he hasn't considered sitting out a game to rest it. That hasn't even been discussed, and he expects to be good to go on Thursday. It also looks like left tackle Tyron Smith could be making a return to the lineup after missing three because of the ankle. We saw him out of practice on Tuesday doing some light field work, and there seems to be optimism around here. Keep in mind, there was similar optimism ahead of the Kansas City Chiefs game, and that morning they decided that he would not play at left tackle. Instead, they kept Terrence Steele there. That offensive line struggled against that four-man rush, and they can expect a similar four-man rush against the Raiders when they host them Thursday on Thanksgiving.
Thanks so much, Jane. Looking forward to seeing you on our show live tomorrow. Let's take a look at where we stand in the NFC East before Week 12, which starts tomorrow with those three games. The Cowboys have the division lead, two games up on Philly. The Eagles and Washington both on two-game win streaks. Dallas coming off their worst offensive performance of the season. Two games, nice little cushion for those Cowboys. Should they be concerned with the rest of the NFC East? There was the star you drew, but a lot of question marks. One too many for my liking.
There's a lot of question marks. Yeah. It is a nice cushion. I don't know if anybody's going to go get the Cowboys in the East yet, but there's something happening in Philadelphia. It really is happening. If you've watched them the last few weeks, the Eagles are playing nasty ball. And I really mean that. Purely statistical, over the last 4 weeks, they are on the best run they have rushing the ball since that team has had since 1950. They are mauling people. Lane Johnson is back. He's incredible. Kelsey is incredible. It's all repeating itself, and it's all this Nick Sirianni. I promised you guys the roots are deep, and we're going to get after this. They're mauling people. The Jordan Mailata thing is not a joke. We talked about it yesterday. He scrapped on the field with the Saints. He buried the guy. He was in a wrestling match. Like, all we talk about this time of year, and it's so cliched and it's so football coach, identity. They have one. They run the hell out of it. After this plays was enough that they fought and they wrestled, this dude goes to Instagram, posts the picture of him pancaking Davenport, and then has the audacity to look where the location is on the post. It's at IHOP. He's at the International House of Pancakes.
Well played.
They're smashing people, and I really, really, really like it. Sirianni's out there, and this is an actual quote. He says, the blocks these guys are doing are like in movies. I'm seeing Kelsey do things that Billy Bob did in Varsity Blues. Wow. He's talking about that. And they got this quarterback who runs it. They got a backfield who runs it. 1950, the last time they have run the ball this well. I don't see anybody with the New York Giants uniform on who's going to stop them this weekend. Maybe they can go get them, but Dallas would have to fall. I'm just saying the Philadelphia thing, we said from the get-go, someone crazy is going to make the NFC playoffs because there's a seventh spot that no one wants. Philadelphia right now, I don't care what the record is, they're coming. And one of these teams is going to grab it. I like what they're doing a lot.
And it's crazy because when they lost to the Chargers 2 weeks ago, they were 3-6.
3-6.
And it's like
the wrap.
It's 24-24. If we stop the Chargers one time, we can get the ball back and Hurts can win it for us and the home crowd will go nuts. And Herbert just bleeds the clock and the Chargers get out of that win with a win. And they're 3-6. All right, season's over. In the last 2 weeks, into Denver, over 200 yards on a great defense. And then New Orleans, the number one ranked rush defense in the entire league, 240 yards. This is a stat I saw. Jalen Hurts is the first Eagles quarterback to run for more than 50 yards five straight games since Randall Cunningham. So, like, McNabb never did it. Vic never did it. They're getting things going. And if you want to talk about, like, why Dallas should even care about a team that they're ahead of the standings, take a look at what the schedule reveals itself for Philly the next few weeks. Right. At Giants, I would think that's a win. At Jets, I would think that's a win. Bye. Get your legs ready. Get your rest.
Then they're 7-6 at the bye.
Let's say they're 7-6.
Let's go.
Washington at home. Okay.
Don't know.
Washington's won a couple games. Giants, we don't know what the Giants need. Washington, and then Dallas, which might be for the division. That might be for the division. Dallas, so they are alive and well.
Or Dallas might have nothing to play for.
They might have nothing to play for. They might have the number one seed locked
up. They have the wild card.
Every single one of those games, okay, is either in Philadelphia or within 50 miles of Philadelphia.
Okay.
To the point where they do not have to get on a plane the remainder of the season. They have to travel. Everything's going to be by bus. It's going to be by... Look, these are all games on the East. The farthest they have to go is to Washington, D.C. from Philadelphia, which is an hour and a half ride.
That's a quirk.
That is a scheduling quirk that maybe Howard Katz and Mike North and Charlotte up there in the scheduling thing did not realize. You want to talk about an advantage to never have to get on a plane, to never have to travel like that again. Eagles, they're two wins in a row, and no, that Week 17 game, it might matter against Washington. The Week 18 game against the Cowboys might matter also.
It makes perfect sense. Why fly when you could drive? That's what they're doing with their offense, too.
Sean.
The Eagles, absolutely, they're a tough out right now, and that January 9th game could very well determine the division, as you guys are talking about. Jordan Mailata has been fun to watch on film. I love all that stuff. But that game may not even mean anything if the Washington football team takes care of business. They swept the Dallas Cowboys last year, and look, I know Dak was not playing, but the fact that they play Washington twice, that is the one aspect of for Dallas that could derail this entire thing. I love the cushion that they have. And for them, the Dallas Cowboys are built to win right now. They're built with the offensive line. They're built with the run game, with their physical defense right now. But they've got to beat Washington. Like, if they lose those two games, now all of a sudden that game against Philly becomes relevant. If Dallas wins those games, then that Philly game may not even mean anything. But I just look at that Washington defense, even without Chase Young. they can get after the quarterback. Jonathan Allen is balling out right now. And when you look at how they were dismantled by Chris Jones for the Chiefs, that to me is my biggest concern right now. Jane Slater's talked about Tyron Smith coming back at left tackle. That could be a huge cog to this whole thing.
Injuries are a huge piece.
I thought Terrence Steele did a good job at right tackle. Mm-hmm. You move over to left side. Look, it's tough. It's not the same thing, Kyle. Sure. It's like brushing your teeth with your left hand.
Can't do it.
Yeah.
You can get your teeth clean, but you get stuff all over your face.
For them to take the division, they'd have to win out, and the Cowboys would have to drop, like three games? I don't know.
I tend to come out that way.
Yeah.
It feels a little like baseball. Like you got like a 16-game lead with like 20 to play. We can't blow this.
We've seen crazier things.
We have.
I love Moneyball. They did it, those A's.
I know.
They found a way.
Wow.
Peter Schrader saying cataclysmic loss.
If you lose to the Raiders.
The Raiders are playing for their season tomorrow, by the way. I don't know. They're a wounded animal. I don't want to play them either.
They're a wounded animal.
Yeah, but wounded animals bite.
So the Cowboys, come get those injured players back. I think the division is there.
Scott Atterberg, that's his name.
On Thanksgiving?
You know it.
Three big ones. Bears, Lions, Raiders, Cowboys, Bills, Saints. It's all tomorrow. This is our show. Welcome to Good Morning Football, presented by Old Trapper Beef Jerky. Peter Schrager, Kyle Brandt. My name's Kay Adams. And Super Bowl champion Sean O'Hara is here.
I got a good stat. This is the first time since 2001 every team playing on Thanksgiving coming off a loss.
Okay.
Ooh.
So teams might be playing a little ornery and angry. I like that.
Or just crying.
Angry, potentially. Yeah. All right, great stuff. We've got a full schedule. Let's bring in Ian Rappaport. He's on the graphic. It means he's important. It means he will be here all day tomorrow. Ian, talk to me, and let's check in on that last game, the nightcap tomorrow. Bills, Saints. What's the latest with the Saints' two top running backs that they'll be facing, Alvin Kamara and Mark Ingram?
Yeah, just a week after the Bills got ran on seemingly endlessly, the New Orleans Saints play them, and we don't know which running backs they'll actually have. We'll start with Alvin Kamara, their star running back for the New Orleans Saints. He has not practiced yet this week with a knee injury, a knee sprain. And, you know, we thought he might be able to come back last week, practice on a limited basis. It was just too soon for him. So we'll see if he's able to get out there today, but obviously not looking good for Thursday. And then his sidekick, Mark Ingram, former mentor, now sidekick, he also has a knee injury. This does not seem serious to me, more like just a little bit of swelling. Consider day-to-day. So remains to be seen whether or not he is able to go on Thursday. But at least Mark Ingram does have a chance to go. If he cannot, Tony Jones, who's a rookie, who was promising but put an IR, and really the reason they cut Latavius Murray, he would end up as the bell cow if both these guys can't go.
Appreciate the update, Ian Rappaport. That one, the last game of three tomorrow right here on NFL Network. We'll get you set for those, and we'll have all the in-between total access, and we'll have, of course, game day as well. Thank you so much, Ian. Talk to you in a bit. Both of these squads that we're talking about are coming off brutal losses in Week 11. Who has more on the line, though, on Thanksgiving? Mm-hmm. The Bills or the banged-up Saints? Let's remember, the Bills healthy, the Saints not at all.
Yeah, I think Buffalo, this is like must-win territory. You have to stop the bleeding. The Saints are at home. It's not going to be easy playing there on Thanksgiving, but I look at what's going on with Buffalo right now, and coming off of last week's loss and then knowing that Jacksonville was just 2 weeks before that, this is like, okay, the Patriots are looming. We can have this. The way they lost to the Colts, 45 points, all being rushed by Jonathan Taylor, Carson Wentz completing passes with ease, the dominance by the defense. This was one of those demoralizing losses where you need to get off the mat. The bright side is this. I've seen Buffalo go into Pittsburgh in the last few years and win a big game on a Sunday night. We've seen Buffalo in prime time, you know, beat the Chiefs, beat the Titans. Like, they've done this before. They've had the chance to answer back from bad losses or to make a statement. They need to do this because the Patriots are right there. They play the Patriots next week. And if you come into the Patriots after getting your butts beat and your clocks cleaned by Indianapolis at home, and then an injured, hobbled, who knows who's playing quarterback, who knows who's playing running back? Mm. I don't know any of the wide receiver Saints team. Then we're talking that this is like, are they a playoff team?
Yeah.
Buffalo needs this. This is their mini Super Bowl before the big Super Bowl next week, which is before the really big Super Bowl in week 16 against the Bills.
And then the actual one in L.A.
And the actual one in L.A.
Yeah, sure.
Four Super Bowls.
Yeah.
It's a monster game for the Bills. They're coming off that shellacking. And then a couple weeks ago, they laid an egg against the Jacksonville Jaguars offensively. So they can't afford to slip up here. And you're playing a Saints offense that is banged up at running back. They're banged up at tackle. Look, they're both Ryan Ramczyk and Teron Armstead have been out. So no excuses right here. For Bills fans, they're probably looking at their defense saying, look, that was a blip on the radar, all right? We just gave up 5 touchdowns to Jonathan Taylor. Mm-hmm. You know how many touchdowns the Bills defense have given up in the entire season to running backs before that game? 5. Mm-hmm. So I think that was kind of the outlier, and I think this defense has to be motivated.
It's some outlier.
It's an outlier. It's a heck of a game. It's a heck of an outlier. It might take a little more mac and cheese to get over that, but for the Bills, they absolutely cannot.
What's the headline the next day if they lose this game?
Buffalo chicken dip? I don't know.
Mm-hmm. How about end of days? Judgment Day.
About it was fun while it lasted. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Mm-hmm. You mentioned the Patriots. I mean, look, nobody's slowing them down right now. And for them to have to face them twice now, that's big.
It's so funny because so Steve Tasker and Chris Brown are the beating heart of the Bills media, and they do the local show One Bills Live every week. And a couple weeks ago, they were like, oh, come on, this Patriots thing is overrated, stupid, ridiculous, overhyped. And then it's like, but are you guys scared? They're like, oh, we're terrified.
Yeah,
are you kidding? We're absolutely terrified. We cannot even sleep at night. And here's the thing. Like, there's a lot of stats that speak well to the Bills' defense. It's all BS, nonsense, empty calories, mounted up against Jets and Dolphins, bad teams.
40-0 over Houston.
40-0 over Houston. Derrick Henry smashed them. Jonathan Taylor smashed them. And there's this fear that we don't have the toughness. So, in New Orleans, in the Dome, against Trevor whoever, and running back whoever.
Trevor whoever.
This is massive. Everybody's watching. And I don't know how many people actually watch the Bills-Colts. Everybody's watching this one. Do not lose this game, because then it's full panic. And then the Patriots are marching all over you. It's bad. It's bad. I'm running out of words to say.
Yeah.
Bills, huge pressure.
Huge game.
Week 11 is overtime for Little Witch Guy Wednesday. Yep. Fantasy lineups, week 12. Shrags, you have anything good?
Let's get right into it. This is from a Vikings fan, Skullmaster.
Ooh.
Right. Russell Wilson, who was a first quarterback for everyone, or Jalen Hurts. I mean, the fact we're going into week 12 and this is a debate in fantasy football is wild to me. And yet, I think I know where you might be leaning.
I mean, Shrags, it's not even close. It's not even close at all. Here's what needs to happen. You cannot let Russell Wilson's name, his panache, his legacy, credibility, all of that, and what he's done for your fantasy football team in years past, you cannot let that shadow what is going on right now. Live in the moment, will you? Jalen Hurts is the number one fantasy scoring quarterback this season. He's tops on top of everybody. 8 rushing touchdowns, 50-plus rushing yards in 5 straight games now. That is the safest floor in the business and a high ceiling. I don't think you can take him out of your lineup. They've got great matchups coming up. Shrakes, you showed me the schedule. I like each and every one of those. Unless his play really starts to fall off, you're not benching Jalen Hurts in any matchup the rest of the way. Russell Wilson, he has yet to put up double-digit fantasy points since returning from injury. He does not quite look right. I'd keep him on my bench, and I probably wouldn't play him. Honestly, I wouldn't until he proves otherwise and he starts to look like himself. Again, it's a weird thing, but it's not even close.
He hasn't won a game at home all season. Like, I don't know what we're doing. Mm-hmm. So this one's in Washington. They're coming off 2 wins. I wouldn't start.
Is there a team we talk about less than this? I mean, Seahawks are definitely the bottom 5 teams that we've talked about this year, right?
I think we'll make up for it in the offseason.
Okay.
Yeah. A lot of
Russ.
Very
rust. True. Good yeah. call. What do we got,
where, on a week where everyone's cooking, it probably won't be Russell.
Mm. All right. It's Sean.
Here we
my
go.
Man.
We got a tweet coming in from
That's
Travis.
It's Sean.
Right now. Enough about the quarterbacks. Let's talk about some running backs.
I'm just going to come to that. I'm going to.
Yeah, I know.
Let's all right. Go. Travis wants to know. He's got Christian McCaffrey as his running back 1 already.
All right.
He's talking about his
RB2.
Very nice.
Do I go A.J. Dillon or Antonio Gibson?
Christian McCaffrey with Gibson, the most silent comeback of all time. Nobody's talking about it, but he looks really good on the field instead. Yeah. Let's go between these two. It's hard because A.J. Dillon looked very good in his first bite of having that backfield to himself. He had 97 total yards against the Vikings. 6. Mm-hmm. It's the 6 catches for me, though. That's what I want. It was impressive, especially because the Packers fell behind so early, and he's getting all the love and the rock, and Antonio Gibson did look healthy last week. He had 95 yards. So these are both good options. I'm going to lean towards A.J. Dillon because of those 6 catches. He had lots of targets. He had more catches Sunday alone than Gibson has had targets over the last 3 weeks combined. So J.D. McKissick, he's going to steal opportunities through the air. If you're in a PPR league or just need those extra points between these two. I also like Dillon's matchup. Dillon has the Rams, Packers-Rams this week. Close call, but I would lean Dillon.
Tweet from Kevin. Kevin's got a question. Ramondre Stevenson of the Red Hot Patriots or the Godfather, Mark Ingram, Big Truss, of the New Orleans Saints back home and his as his flex. What do you think?
I mean, poor Saints. The injuries have piled up. It's brutal. They can hardly operate. And now Mark Ingram isn't 100%. So keep your eyes on Mark Ingram's status ahead of this one. If he plays tomorrow on Thanksgiving, I do think you got to put him in there. Okay. He averaged 110 total yards, 5 catches a game over the last 2 weeks since we didn't have Kamara at our disposal. I like what Ramondre is doing. But you've got Brandon Bolden getting in the mix there, creeping Damian. Away. Damian Harris is still getting the majority of the reps. And if you just look at the numbers, Ramondre has been on the field for more than 35% of snaps once this season. He's done great with the limited snaps he's been given, but I think if Ingram's out there, you got to get him. All right, should we do a Wednesday Thanksgiving food?
Yeah.
Mac, mac and cheese versus what's another good contender? Stuffing?
Stuffing or wins. Dressing as it was.
Stuffing wins. Well, just to let everybody know, we'll be here on Thanksgiving tomorrow. We'll have to fight Matt Judon for saying that mac and cheese is the worst Thanksgiving Day food. And then Mac Jones said he doesn't like pumpkin pie. That's not a hot take. That I kind of agree with.
I just want to wish happy hunting to all of the college kids returning home today who are going to go to the local bars on a tradition we at Good Morning Football call Make Out Christmas, the night before Thanksgiving. You've been away, you're back, especially maybe you didn't come back last year, didn't go out to the bar last year. You find your high school girlfriend, boyfriend, or the person you wanted to be your high school girlfriend, boyfriend, and just go for it. Happy hunting, lock and load, Tigers. You be you tonight.
It's going to be an interesting night given the, you know, do you bring a hand sanitizer? Do you
mask? Don't ruin it.
Yeah, like, sure.
Mask might help some people. Make Out Christmas. Miss the after years here in New York.
Happy hunting to you too.
We'll see you. Happy hunting.
I hope I make out tonight.
Happy hunting.